Hello, and welcome to AI Curious. My name is Jeff Wilser. I'm a journalist, I'm a human, and I am curious about AI. And one thing that we've been seeing again and again is there is a big freaking gap between the potential promise of AI and how it can impact business and operations and make everyone more productive, and the reality of how many businesses are actually incorporating it in a meaningful way. And that gets us to adoption, why it is or is not being adopted. And it seems like a lot of this is less of a real tech issue and more of a cultural issue, which is why today's guest is perfect to speak on that. Adam Bai is the Chief Strategy Officer of Glimpse, a company focused on research using AI. They work with blue chip clients like HubSpot, but he's also an anthropologist and focused on culture. He lives at the intersection of tech and culture, and he's done a ton of research exploring how AI kind of intersects with teams and collaboration and corporate culture. And he's also done a ton of work at looking at bias. And I think it's an incredibly important issue that we've touched upon before in a podcast, but I really wanted to unpack more today of the issue of the inherent bias that can exist in Gen AI. At times it can perpetuate the current bias that exists in society and then kind of amplify it. So as a company is thinking about incorporating AI, what can they do to minimize bias? What can they do to make sure it's done equitably? What can they do to make sure that everyone is benefiting and people feel empowered and not marginalized by AI? Adam and I touch upon all of this. He gets into the weeds of in a delightful way of why it's not just about this code or this tech, but also how from an organizational perspective, people need to think of it differently with AI. And one thing I kind of really appreciated from our conversation is how Gen AI, when done right, can really help different chunks of a company speak together. And that sounds kind of like corporate gobbledygook, but to put it more plainly, Gen AI, like ChatGPT, is really freaking good at a lot of things, right? So it can help different silos in a company like finance and marketing and legal, or whatever, because it knows a lot about finance and legal and marketing. It has a unique ability to consider problems more holistically and cut across all the different verticals of the company. Adam goes into that in some depth, and I found it pretty interesting. So I think anyone who's at all into any kind of business will find this interesting. I think anyone who cares about culture will find it interesting. And it's a good reminder that the tech is often about a lot more than the tech. It's also about communities, organizations, how teams actually work. So with all that, please enjoy my conversation with Adam Bai, Chief Strategy Officer of Glimpse. Adam, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jeff. I'm excited to be here.
We're going to talk all things AI adoption, the how, the why, how it's going, the research you and your team have done. I'd love to start, though, with one of the trickiest issues of them all with AI, and that's AI and bias. What have you and your research discovered and learned so far about the tricky issue of AI and bias?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's a huge question. And I think that most of us agree that there's a challenge there, but people disagree about the best way to tackle it. So let me just tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from. Firstly, by training, I'm an anthropologist of technology and innovation. So I recognize that tech never gets adopted evenly throughout the world. There are always access issues. The effects of tech adoption are always felt in unequal ways, depending on who you are, where you're situated, what race you are, what ethnicity, what gender, where you sit in the economy, all of that stuff. So it's a very complex terrain of struggle that we need to deal with. The other thing I'd say is that I've done a lot of research, both with Glimpse, the company I'm helping start, and as an individual consultant anthropologist about AI and bias. And the first thing I want to argue is that the whole concept of bias is a little bit of a problem, not because it doesn't exist, but because bias pre-exists generative AI, as we all know, right? That historically there's been racism, sexism, you know, under listening to different groups of people in society, quite often for really horrible reasons, sometimes just because, you know, it's a kind of subconscious ignoring of different people's experiences. So when we think about the fact that generative AI is only as good as its training data, ultimately,
garbage in, garbage out, basically, right?
Garbage in, garbage out. And also a lot of that training data is biased. So, I mean, to take one really straightforward example, you know, insurance industry in the U.S. historically has not provided insurance or access to insurance to communities of color disproportionately. Of course, we don't want to continue doing that, right? We want to decide who to give insurance to based on their ability to pay or how worthy their cause is and not based on their skin color. I think that there's that sort of problem in terms of like the training data that we can't just sort of reproduce the forms of bias that have existed in the past and then make them even more invisible by incorporating them into models that operate without people intervening in them very much, sort of just perpetuating them and making them even worse. And then there's a problem when it comes to outputs, right? We've all read studies that show that in particular when it comes to things like image generators, you know, if you ask one of the platforms to tell you what, you know, a doctor looks like versus a nurse versus a custodian, you know, versus some other kind of job, you'll often get real problems when it comes to, you know, skin color, gender, etc. And I was just looking at a Bloomberg study, actually. It's not only a problem at the moment, it's also disproportionate relative to statistics within the economy now. So you'll get a bunch of people who don't even match up with the reality of society, which is that, of course, you have a lot of women as doctors and so on. So there's that problem. And then I think that there's another problem which has to do with perceptions of generative AI and access. And that's really the area that I'm focusing on with Glimpse and in some of my speaking and consulting work. We did a study with a business media organization called Charterworks of 1,000+ employees at all levels of the U.S. economy across a bunch of different industries, folks from every different background. And we found that there's less excitement when it comes to generative AI and less early experimentation on the part of women. Those problems could magnify over time if we're not sure that we're giving access equally to folks or generating interest.
Do you have any theories on why that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it probably just has to do with like a tech fanboy thing where a lot of men, in particular young men, tend to be really interested in the newest technology. And women sometimes are less interested in technology for technology's sake. So they tend to be later adopters of new technologies. It isn't to say, of course, they'll use it in equally or perhaps superior ways to men eventually, right? But they're less kind of excited experimenting with it now. And if you look at the data, there's something like 20 or 30 points less likely to have messed around with things like ChatGPT than men, at least within this population of employees. And that can be a problem because early knowledge, early experience, early excitement will translate into kind of durable competitive advantages when these people try to develop their careers, you know, in conjunction with generative AI in the future. That's just one example. I mean, there are lots of others.
What else did your research discover?
Yeah. So another thing we've been looking at is what percentage of jobs in the US economy are most likely to be impacted by generative AI, you know, in the sense that people might be replaced by the technology. And a disproportionate number of those jobs are held by people of color and women. So the impacts might be more severe, and there's a kind of excitement gap or access gap at the moment. And some of the organizations that I'm dealing with now are trying to address that. But I think it takes like a really concerted strategy to try to fix these developing problems before they become real issues. So yeah, I mean, in there's the access issue, the kind of the out representation and outputs issue, and then the training data issue. And all three of them are serious. But my suggestion is that instead of just saying, there's bias, what are we going to do about it? Let's eliminate it. Let's think of this as a kind of moment where we can rethink what bias means and reframe it in terms of equity and equal access.
Yeah. So how would you reframe bias, and what does that accomplish aside from kind of changing the optics or changing the way we think about it? What is kind of a substantive way it actually changes the equation?
Yeah, I think it's of course the optics are important, but I think it's less about optics and more about outcomes. So, you know, if you look at a particular industry and the way that they're going to adopt generative AI, insurance, banking, credit, you know, market research even, we need to make sure that the training data is representative such that the decisions we're making actually reflect the real world. I can give you a really good example. We did work with a ad agency called Eisenberg that does a lot of work with some of the biggest video game publishers in the world. I can't mention their names, but it's like five of the top 10 publishers. And the question was, how do we tackle this problem of toxicity within video gaming communities? Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a market researcher, where do you go to learn about that toxicity? You can't really scrape data from the video gaming communities because people already feel excluded. Their voices aren't there. The data's not there. The words they're using aren't there to learn from. So what do? Well, you have to go effectively gather data from a whole new group of people that's already been excluded from these communities or already feels excluded. So we went out and did that. We interviewed through our platform Glimpse tons and tons of gamers who felt excluded because of their gender or sexuality or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then input that data essentially into our model in order to make sure that the picture we were sharing with some of those gaming companies and with Eisenberg was accurate, right? Because here's a sort of real world impact. We discovered that something like 20 to 30% of gamers from these groups, women, you know, people of color, LGBTQ+, et cetera, folks, felt so excluded from gaming communities that they stopped playing the games entirely. That's a lot of revenue to leave on the table by a gaming company. And if you can find a way to create a community, maybe an alternate one or rules within, you know, the sort of primary communities that feels welcoming to those people, maybe they're not quitting. Maybe you don't have to leave that revenue on the table. So yeah, it's the right thing to do, but it's also a business challenge. And I think that if you look at that across a lot of different industries, you'll see that problematic sort of replicated. In fact, we're working with an ad agency that focuses primarily on African-American markets, right, consumers. And they want to know how young Black consumers, in particular people at historically Black colleges and universities, are coming up with their ideas about style and fashion and music, which then, you know, often sort of trickle into the rest of the culture. But those voices aren't yet really part of the training data corpus. So one of our jobs as a market research platform is to ask interesting questions of thousands of people, gather a lot of natural language data, and then learn, and then inform the way we're using generative AI based on all of that new discovery and new data.
So you mentioned that the real solution, or one of the real solutions, is to reframe from bias to equity. And you gave some concrete examples that I loved of how you're kind of going outside the scope of the training data that's already there, because it's kind of like flawed inherently and kind of matching the inherent flaws we have in our society. What are some other concrete strategies or advice that you're recommending to clients on how to implement or even consider and teach AI in ways to maximize equity and minimize bias?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things I find myself talking about a lot. I was just giving a talk to one of the bigger CPG companies in the world, some of their leadership, a few weeks ago, and exactly this question came up. And what I said was, Firstly, it's really important to frame the introduction of generative AI into an organization in terms of value and learning opportunities for employees, and not just in terms of productivity gains or efficiency gains. That the more people see generative AI primarily as a threat to their job, especially those gateway jobs that people use to kind of climb the corporate ladder, if people see those, the rug being pulled out from under them exclusively, then they're going to be much less excited about working with generative AI. And I think that'll actually lead to more equitable distribution of, you know, capabilities around Gen AI throughout the organization. So that's one thing. I think another thing that we can do is really to engineer in moments of friction into Gen AI processes where people can exercise their judgment, right? Where we don't want actually a totally automated process. We want people empowered to say, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. You know, maybe we're kind of like optimizing it for a thing that we shouldn't be optimizing for, or that's out of line with our values as a team or as an organization. And you want to empower people, I think, to speak up. And that doesn't just mean that you're saying, hey, you have the freedom to speak up. It actually means designing processes around those moments of human friction. The way I always think about it is, there are some professors at Rotman in Toronto who wrote a book called Prediction and Judgment I like. And the argument they make is that generative AI, which is ultimately a predictive technology, right? It's based on inferences and so on. The cheaper and faster that prediction gets, the more difficult but also more important and more expensive judgment becomes, which is to say you have this massive of predictive power coming at you all of the time. So the question is, how do you train as many people as possible to feel empowered to exercise judgment, you know, in the midst of that deluge of prediction and of data? And I think that it's really important that it not just be the top of the pyramid within an organization, it not just be, say, the marketers or the finance people, but it be, you know, for instance, people in the HR function, right, who are also getting access to all kinds of new predictive, you know, data platforms, et cetera, in the form of Workday or whatever platforms they're using every day. How do you empower that person who's looking at the dashboard to ask a good question of the data, to think about whether or not it should be translated into the real world, whether the training data is representative, how it fits into a team process? And I think that organizations, if they want to do it right, are going to have to spend a fair bit of time and money empowering their people, not just to like learn about the basics of generative AI, that's great, but to learn about the basics of what it means to adopt it equitably, powerfully, so that it generates more value and actually includes more of the organization more actively than they might assume that they would need to otherwise.
I love that. And you're already going there. So let's get to AI adoption more broadly and more widely. I love that your background is not just focused on the tech, but has a much more robust context of culture, anthropology, and ultimately, as we discussed kind of before recording, that almost matters more for true tech adoption than the tech itself, the actual culture. So with that in mind, what are some of your key insights so far into why AI is succeeding at times in terms of being adopted in companies, and then when it's not really working? And to back up for a second, one reason I ask is there's so much hype out there about, oh my God, AI is going to revolutionize business and boost productivity and all this stuff. Then you actually talk to people at companies, including many listeners of this podcast, who are in various forms of business. And they're like, shit, okay, it sounds great in theory, but I don't really know how or why to inject AI into my division or my team or whatever. So I think what you're focused on, the actual company culture, teamwork, that matters so much more than the tech itself. So that was a mouthful of a question, but what are some of your key insights so far looking at AI adoption in companies?
Yeah, I mean, It's a mouthful of a question, but it's what I spend a lot of my time thinking about. So let me say firstly that I think this isn't a new insight, but I think we're at a real inflection point when it comes to generative AI adoption. It came out, You know, by some measures, ChatGPT was the most successful software product ever in terms of its spread, or at least, you know, free users. You know, we could say that that was sort of like the first wave where it's primarily individual. It's primarily designed to save time or increase efficiency or to brainstorm, you know, if you're an individual. Yep. And companies, it's within every company now, right? It's too late if a company thinks it's going to keep it out. All your people are using it, but they're using it in a really ad hoc, fragmented way. They're doing it at home. They may be doing it at work, but they're not doing it in the context of any kind of process or any kind of strategic plan. For the most part, there are a few corporate exceptions. Now, I think we're kind of moving into second wave of adoption, or at least some organizations are. So what does that mean? That means there's some kind of organizational framework and things are starting to happen at the team level. People are starting to think, ah, here's what my team's supposed to do. Here's the process. How can we supercharge the process, add value, or increase productivity when it comes to the process, right? And then I think the third wave is very much going to be at the organization level or even ecosystem level. How are we going to transform the way teams are organized and the way processes work, not just to add value to them, but actually to rethink a lot of what the company does in terms of the way it's ingesting data, making decisions, and then, you know, doing things out in the world, selling stuff, saying stuff, whatever. So it's like, okay, we're between wave one and wave two. What do we do about it? I think if you're a company, there are probably a few things you should be doing based on, this is, you know, based on my experience, but also on a lot of a few large scale research projects that Glimpse, our research platform that heavily draws on the power of generative AI to understand the marketplace, understand market discovery and so on, has been conducting with HubSpot, which is one of our, you know, most important clients. HubSpot, you know, they make money if they understand the needs of marketers and salespeople, in particular when it comes to tech adoption, right? So we've been helping them understand the adoption of generative AI across the economy. So a few insights, a few things I've learned, right? And, you know, maybe some of these are more interesting than others, but one is Gen AI adoption happens in team and social contexts, ultimately, right? Just like business happens in team and social contexts.
You kind of hear anecdotally, so-and-so is just kind of goofing around with ChatGPT.
Exactly.
And they realize, oh, okay, actually I can use this to help me brainstorm titles for my presentation, right? And then, so you'd think it's kind of organically happening individually, but you're saying it's most effective when there is a team and social setting. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the
paradox.
Yeah, it's important that individuals are messing around with it, right? But if you think about what happens in an organization, there's no like work output for the most part that like one person works on and then like the new idea gets implemented right away, right? People ingest data in team settings. They talk about it. They decide on a course forward. It moves up the chain. There are a bunch of different processes. So I can give you one really concrete example because this is really like kind of abstract. Take marketing, right? Where you might have like a kind of strategic planning process that, you know, even though people are trying to become much more agile, is usually happening on an annual basis, right? Where you are deciding what your goals are, your revenue targets, you're deciding, you know, what kind of customer segments you want to target, where the opportunities are, where you're going to get that revenue and that growth. And then you design like a marketing communication strategy around it and you implement it throughout the year. There are lots of different teams involved, right? Lots of different divisions, people who have different kinds of capabilities, and they're all deciding, you know, who should we target? What's the opportunity? How are we going to implement it? What do the ads look like? You know, how are we handling like our media mix, like across different channels? And then, oh, are our ads performing? Is our communication strategy doing a good job for us? Or do we need to adjust it? And then do we need to adjust some of our basic assumptions about where growth is going to come from or product market fit, all that stuff? That's a very complicated, intricate process.
Yep.
So tons of people involved, all team or cross team collaboration. There's no one person, unless it's a one person company, that's making all those decisions, right? So you're like, okay, how can we apply generative AI to really help that process along or even rethink the process? Well, there are a few points in the process you can try it, right? One that's really common is people will try dynamic content creation using products like Jasper, right? Say you have a bunch of targets and you create one ad. Maybe you want to adapt the ad in small ways in order to more precisely target a bunch of different groups. And that would be like cost or time prohibitive without generative AI. But there's other stuff you can do. And I think this is kind of where my work with Glimpse comes in. You can also use generative AI to better understand the market and the customers that you're trying to target. What makes them tick? Where are the opportunities, et cetera? So all this is to say that Glimpse did this big study with HubSpot of, so far we've done two waves of 1,800 senior marketers and salespeople globally across Brazil, Japan, France, Germany, UK, United States. And what we discovered is that those companies that are mostly focusing on things like dynamic content creation are not seeing all that much ROI unless they're also using generative AI to better understand their customers and the market. So you need to think about the entire process and where generative AI can add the most value before you start messing around with it systematically, I think, which is to say that if you're a marketer, you should, you know, my opinion based on some research and some data is you should really invest in understanding your market more fully, making sure your segmentations really make sense. They capture the nuance of the way people talk and think out into the world. And then you can start thinking about how to target those people with lots and lots of cool Gen AI created stuff that you're sending out. But in order to even imagine that as a problematic, you need to think through your entire process and you need to think through how different teams in your organization interact. So you ask, well, why shouldn't people just mess around with it as individuals? I think they should. They absolutely should, right? None of this works unless individuals are familiar with the technology, excited about it, have some sense of like what a prompt is, what it can do, what it can't do. But at the same time, simultaneously, I think that there needs to be a program of focused experimentation within teams and within organizations that somebody, a team of people, is looking after to say, okay, here's our process now. What points of the process should we apply Gen AI-based solutions? Why? How are we going to experiment to figure out the best way to do that? And then how are we going to bring in data, you know, based on those experiments in order to make better decisions about Gen AI adoption in the future? And I think that the smartest companies are starting to do that.
I want to get to Glimpse in more depth in a minute.
Yeah.
Before we do, what types of company cultures or even the way teams are configured have you seen be most successful in integrating and adopting AI? Or is it the case that it kind of doesn't matter what the current baseline culture is in, or type of company or type of industry? It's more like your mindset for thinking about incorporating it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that company cultures are tricky things. Every company has one or several. Sometimes it's hard to kind of figure out what defines them. But, you know, there are probably a few commonalities I've seen within companies that seem to be doing a good job with Gen AI adoption. So one really cool thing about AI is that it allows you to forget or overcome some of the old barriers between teams and functions and sources of data within companies, right? So if you think about it, like maybe take marketing again, maybe you have a team that's looking at social data, a team that's sending out surveys and doing market research, a team that's looking at NPS for customers. Those teams actually don't talk to each other very much. Everyone's looking at their own data source and it all rolls up to maybe a single dashboard, but there's very little sense of what it means to look across them. Well, generative AI, the ultimate opportunity or one of the ultimate opportunities that it unlocks is actually to look across those artificial boundaries. They're very inside out boundaries, right? It's like the reason there's a social team and a survey team is because their work is different. But ultimately, they're trying to ask the same questions. It's like, who's excited about our products or our message? Who's not? What are the growth opportunities? What are the risks? The same questions, right? And you really want a holistic view of the market or of your audience if you're an advocacy group or a candidate or whatever. But you don't get that because of these artificial distinctions. So therefore, within the organization, you get separate teams that aren't talking to each other well. I think because generative AI creates the condition of possibility to look at data across those boundaries, it also creates the condition of possibility for teams to really interact and communicate with one another in new ways across those boundaries. So I think rule number one is, of course you have teams and functions. I'm not saying get rid of them. But the companies that do a better job with Gen AI adoption are thinking creatively about collaboration across those old boundaries and old silos.
Interesting.
Because it's what the technology enables. But you have to be ready for it in terms of the conversation, in terms of the process, in terms of places where you can have really free collaboration. And then I think the second thing, if I had to pick two, the second thing is you don't want a free-for-all organization where everyone's just kind of doing their own thing. But at the same time, you don't want a rigidly hierarchical organization where only some people, like the innovation folks, are responsible for messing around with new technology. And then you're expecting it to diffuse from the top down to the rest of the organization. You want an organization where within very clear guidelines, you are empowering lots of people to try experiments. You're managing risk in terms of data privacy and, you know, competitive intelligence and all that, that you don't want people to, you know, put out into the world. Also bias, equity, all those things you need to be thinking about as an organization. But you're empowering teams out there to say like, hey, I know you guys or ladies or whomever, you're dealing with this business challenge. Can you figure out a way to apply generative AI that's uniquely beneficial in terms of solving that challenge?
The reason, if I hear you right, that Gen AI can be so effective in helping connect different teams is that the way it's constructed now, AI, Gen AI is kind of a generalist, right? Like just as right now, I can go in ChatGPT 4 and it can tell me a staggering amount of information on astrophysics. It could also tell me about the best way to raise a puppy. It can tell me about how to fix a lawnmower and on and on and on and on, right? So whereas most companies are structured kind of siloed, there's a marketing department, a finance department, on and on, ChatGPT Gen AI gives a truly unprecedented entity that has this kind of unique skill set to cut across all the silos. So an organization that's able to think a little more flexibly about how to kind of break down, as you point out, Adam, these are kind of internal artificial boundaries within organizations. Because AI and Gen AI can kind of cross these silos, maybe it behooves a company to have the human beings also think a little more cross-functionally and across silos. Is that a fair summary of this?
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Because what you'll get if you keep the old silos and the old processes is that maybe Gen AI will make them slightly more effective or efficient, optimize them a little bit. But you're not going to be able to use Gen AI to really rethink processes or the way you're collaborating or the way you're innovating, the things that actually drive competitive advantage in the economy. To do that, you need to think across the organization in new ways. And, you know, Gen AI is a generalist in that cool way you can ask about like a lawnmower or, you know, a recipe, you know, in 2 seconds, it'll give you kind of equally good answers or equally bad answers. It's also a generalist in terms of like the food it eats, right? Like most tools require really structured forms of data to feed them so that they're giving you good outputs, the spreadsheets and Excel and all that stuff that we're used to from the corporate world. The amazing thing about generative AI is it actually can feed on, right? Can be powered by data that has been historically really hard to code and to organize, right? You could throw in an interview transcript alongside a spreadsheet, alongside audience data, alongside social data, and look for patterns and opportunities across those different forms of data. So that very possibility of looking at lots of stuff next to other stuff to see the whole picture also means that I think we're going to start to need to rethink the way we organize companies a little bit, or at least talk to each other more often across those boundaries to take advantage of the opportunities that AI offers. I mean, there's this way in which like anytime there's a new technology, we tend to like adopt it into an old world and an old set of processes, right? I mean, it's if you look at like early TV, it's just a bunch of like radio serials, but brought onto TV. It took a long time for people to figure out what an actual TV show looked like. I think in the same way, it's going to take people a long time to figure out what a Gen AI native company looks like in terms of how people talk and collaborate and think. And if the first company to figure that out in a particular industry is going to really, really win. And it's also going to be a great place to work.
Totally. And obviously, part of Glimpse's role is to help companies figure these things out. So on that note, tell us a little more about Glimpse, what the mission is, and then how Glimpse is kind of cleverly using AI to help facilitate all of this.
So ultimately, we're interested in helping companies discover new things that are actionable about the world, about the market, about the audiences that matter most to them, about opportunities to accomplish whatever they want to accomplish, sell more products or services, persuade more people, whatever it is. The problem with that historically has been that it's really hard to unlock the value of the data that matters most, right? We all, I think, have an intuitive sense that when people are just talking amongst their friends or telling you what they really think about a brand or an issue, that's the most valuable, right? That's the gold you want to unearth, because you want to sell to people based on what they actually think about and care about, the way they actually talk about something when they're not being, like, you know, interviewed by a market researcher. But the problem is that that natural language data has been historically very difficult to code, to sift through that pile of data for those gold nuggets, for those insights. Because, you know, in the past, it used to take like teams of tens of people to create a code frame and to search for the words that you're looking for and to count them and word frequency, you know, all that stuff. So Glimpse's first reason for existing was to say, what if we could just make the survey better? Like, what if we didn't just have to ask the same old multiple choice questions, but we could ask a bunch of open-ended questions and really see what kind of language people are using, their relationship to brands, products, issues in their own words. But it happened really quickly, almost instantly, and at massive scale. So we could ask thousands and thousands of people in a really targeted way. So that's kind of how Glimpse started. And we started at the right time, honestly. We started before the Gen AI wave hit, but we were already incorporating AI in different interesting ways and investing in AI. And then when everyone's like, oh, ChatGPT is going to change the world, we were like, hey, we're here. Not only you know, are we using generative AI at every stage of the research process, but we've invested a huge amount of time and money and intellectual capital in thinking about how to apply generative AI right in the context of market discovery and insights. And so this actually answers your last question too. I would say the most important thing when it comes to generative AI is to think of the entire process of adoption much more than you think about like which LLM to use, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, at Glimpse, we're really interested in super high quality first party data, real language from real people to inform the work we're doing. And then we're really interested in making sure the outputs from our platform are really usable right away. So content that you can throw up for thought leadership, better decisions that you can make about pursuing market opportunities, recommendations about one ad to put on the air, you know, instead of another ad, et cetera. And one of the coolest things we're doing at Glimpse actually is extending beyond that foundation of known data to think about what it would look like to infer how a customer or an entire segment might respond to a question instantly with a really high degree of accuracy. So if we have time really quickly, I just gave a talk at a market research conference, which sounds, I know, extremely exciting and sexy, but it was good. And the talk was with our client HubSpot again, with their lead researcher. And there's this crazy thing that happened. I mean, crazy to me. Their CEO went to a dinner party. It's like a very kind of CEO thing to do. And she was sitting across from somebody and she thought, wait, this is like our ideal buyer. This is someone who would really, you know, just be, has the perfect personality,
right,
to buy some of this new HubSpot stuff, like really into innovation, willing to take some judicious risks, wants to try new stuff to find new advantages and discover new value for his or her organization. So next day, of course, CEO comes in and talks to the team, including our contact at HubSpot, and says, who's the person? Like, who is this person? And the underlying insight is that the person that a business is selling to, even if you're selling technology to like a IT decision maker in a huge company, is you're selling it to a person, right? They're not just like their title and their gender and some demographic data. They're a person that's a bundle of, you know, attitudes, language, experiences, preferences, etc. So in whatever you're selling them, you better understand all that pretty well so that you can have an authentic dialogue with them. So yeah, we went and did all the normal stuff. We sent a survey out into the world. You know, like I said, Glimpse uses a lot of open-ended questions to capture language. We tried to figure out what makes people who really want to adopt technology to find competitive advantage and value different from those who adopt it primarily to save money and just reduce risk, right? Because there's kind of slightly different kinds of personalities. And then on top of that foundation, we decided to build a virtual customer so that the CEO, when she wakes up in the middle of the night, if she does, and says like, wait, I have an idea. I wonder what our ideal buyer persona would think about it. She can get a response instantly in real time that's concrete enough and accurate enough to be useful to help her shape her thinking. So the wild thing we did is we took, of course, the power of the LLMs we're using alongside a lot of known demographic and firmographic data, right? We know like something like 20 data points about some of the people that we're interviewing. It's all, you know, consensual. It's all data that they've chosen to give us, et cetera, voluntary. We know, you know, age, company they work for, hobbies, all kinds of stuff like that, along with real high quality first party data, their responses to real questions, the language they use to describe their relationship to technology, et cetera. So it's like three layers of stuff create this foundation. And then from the foundation, we make some educated guesses in real time, the platform does, about how somebody might respond to a real question, right? So, you know, say HubSpot has some new innovation they want to put out into the market. The CEO is like, oh my God, I don't know if it's a good idea. Yeah, sure, they should do sort of normal old school market research. That's a big decision. But in order to shape their thinking, in order to rethink what innovation could look like for them, they have this ideal persona that we're continually developing with them and perfecting that they can mess around with. And I think in the end, innovation is just structured messing around, where you're getting really good feedback, actionable feedback from the audiences that matter as you're innovating. And so generative AI allows us to do that. Without generative AI, none of that would have been possible. I think I would say lastly that Glimpse's approach is a little different in the sense that we're basing all of that speculative stuff on a really solid foundation of real data, as opposed to kind of like pulling synthetic data from the air or from essentially just from scraping the internet. So, you know, I want to caution that you should be careful. You have a solid foundation. And the last thing I'll say, and this applies to, well, I'll say other things too, but in response to this question, because it responds to your previous question as well, is of course, match your application of generative AI to the business or organizational or personal challenge that you're looking to solve. Because you don't want to be the guy who's like, Gen AI is great, let me find out a thing to do with it. Mm-hmm. That's not a very good way to adopt technology. You want to be the guy or woman who says, I have a real challenge, or I have six of them. I think maybe challenges 2 and 4 are a uniquely good fit to be solved with Gen AI enabled solutions. So I'm going to explore what that might look like, because Gen AI is not for everyone and it's not good for everything.
Right. And when we get into solutions looking for problem, we're more in crypto and blockchain land. Someone who's written a lot about crypto and blockchain. Awesome,
yes,
Adam.
But we tricked ourselves into thinking that those were problems looking for solutions. This time we're right, though.
this time we're right. Well, also, I love the irony that you guys are using AI to help companies better understand the humanity of their customers. I think that's great.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, love it. This is great. Thank you so much for helping us understand a little more nuance and texture around the idea of AI adoption and bias. Really enjoyed the conversation. Best of luck to you and Glimpse going forward.
Thanks so much, Jeff. I had a blast. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again to Adam Bai, Chief Strategy Officer at Glimpse. And thank you for listening. I hope you got a lot out of this conversation. I enjoyed hearing a little more about the nuance and kind of the real granularities, the realities of trying to bring AI into a business. We will be back soon. As always, please rate this at least 5 stars, or I guess at most 5 stars. Subscribe, forward it to friends and foes and random strangers. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.